What's the only thing better than getting all of your favorite groceries from Kroger delivered through Instacart in as fast as 30 minutes? That would be getting in-store prices on those groceries from the comfort of your couch, or your futon, or your kitchen table, or your daughter's beanbag that's unexpectedly comfortable. You can enjoy in-store prices on all of your faves at select Kroger locations and get delivery to your door in as fast as 30 minutes through Instacart. For a limited time, fees and in-store offer exclusions apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Every day at Sierra, you'll find top brand apparel, footwear, and gear for 20 to 60% less than department and specialty store prices. And during clearance time at Sierra, those incredible prices are 40 divided by 2.5, carry the one, even lower. And when you shop clearance at Sierra, you can save a whole lot more on everything you need to get active and outside. That's a lot of saving. Epic brands, vast selection, teeny tiny prices. That's Sierra. Visit your local Sierra store today or shop online at Sierra.com.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! Welcome in, everybody, to episode 626, damn, of the Rico Bronya. What a week it has been for us as New York Met fans, a very active week. We have all the pods discussing it. I think it really started with Kyle Tucker picking the Los Angeles Dodgers, into the shocking pivot to Bo Bichette, into trading for Luis Robert Jr., into the blockbuster trade of the other night, acquiring Freddie Peralta. I've gotten a lot of feedback. A lot of people disagree with me. I do have a lot of people agreeing with me on my trepidation around the Freddie Peralta trade. So what I will say about that is there's a ton of emails, and we will do an entire podcast dedicated to hearing your views on it and having a nice, healthy debate about the Freddie Peralta trade. Though I do warn you, I am the kind of fan who, while I'm nervous about the trade, and I'll stand by my view on that, as the days go by, I get more excited. Because that's what I do as a sports fan. Like, I may not agree with something or love something as much as you, but as the days go by, you start to say, whoa, we have a rotation headlined by Freddie Peralta and Nolan McLean. That's pretty badass. So coming up in a few days here on the Rico, we'll have a healthy debate, kind of putting a bow on the Freddie Peralta trade, and really, what's next, if there is anything next. So we got a lot of Ricos coming up over the next few days. In fact, who knows? Friday, January 23rd could be a doubleheader in Ricos, for all I know. But on this edition of the Rico, we're going to listen to David Stearns. We've done this a lot during the offseason. We've done this a lot through the years, where we listen to David Stearns' answers to questions, we pause it, and then we give you a quick thought on what he had to say. So if you missed David Stearns' press conference from Thursday, this is great for you. You get to hear everything that he said. If you heard David Stearns' press conference, but you want to hear more of a reaction to everything he said, same thing, the podcast is for you. If you're still mad at David Stearns and you don't want to hear his voice, then shut the podcast off. I'd be the first to tell you. Then skip this one and wait for another episode. Completely up to you. So good job by Hoff. He did all the editing. Let us hear from the president of the New York Mets, David Stearns, and it begins with his opening statement.
Very excited to talk about our recent trade. Very happy to be able to add both Freddie Peralta and Tobias Myers to our organization, to our team. You know, Freddie has clearly established himself as one of the top starters in baseball, one of the most consistent starters in baseball over the past few years, a player I know well, a player I trust, and a player who I think is going to mesh very well with our organization, our team, and our city. Tobias is a player who's a great development story, had worked really hard to get to where he is right now, a pitcher who has demonstrated an ability to help a team both in a rotation and out of the bullpen. That versatility fits well on our roster, and I think he's going to help us as well. We've talked throughout the offseason about our desire to add to our starting pitching group, to find a starter who can pitch in the top half of our rotation. And I'm certainly very pleased that we're able to do this here with this transaction. And then before I take questions, just also want to thank our baseball operations department and our group. Really, since the moment we made our last out in Miami, we've asked a lot from this group. I've asked a lot from this group, and very much appreciate the work, the effort, the time that everyone from our leadership group in baseball operations to our interns have put in throughout this offseason. And with that, happy to take questions.
Yeah, he mentions Tobias Myers, and I don't want to ignore him. We talked a little bit about him in the last Rico, not as much about him on Evan and Tiki. I didn't know that much about Tobias Myers other than what he did against us. I remember him having a really good year in 2024, and I also remember he was the starter. He's the answer to a Mets trivia question. He was the starter in Game 3 against the Brewers. We all remember the ending. You know, we remember Devin Williams versus Pete Alonso, but Tobias Myers was great in that game. And remembering back to that game, it was odd that they took him out as quickly as they did because the Mets couldn't figure him out. But what did I know about him? What did we know about him other than he had a really good year in 2024? And we briefly went through what happened to him last year, which is he started the year in the minors. He made a handful of starts. He went back to the minors, made a handful of starts, and then eventually ended the season out of the bullpen and pitched incredibly well. But David mentioned he's a great developmental story. That was the aspect of Myers I've learned about over the last couple of days. So he was drafted by the Orioles a decade ago, which is why he's not old, but he's not as young maybe as you think. He's 27 years old. He'll turn 28 in the middle of the season. He was drafted by the Orioles in the sixth round all the way back in 2016 and then was traded a year later for Tim Beckham. Remember Tim Beckham? He was like one of the top prospects in baseball for the Tampa Bay Rays. So then the Rays had him. And then 4 years later, they traded him to the Cleveland Indians at the time for Junior Caminero. Then the Giants bought him 6 months later. Then the White Sox claimed him off waivers from the Giants. And then about a month and a half later, released him. And then in November of 2022, the Brewers signed him. And so just knowing his transaction history, sixth round pick, traded twice, released three times, the fact that the Brewers were able to turn him into something is a great developmental story. And now the hope is the Mets can turn him into more. He is a valuable piece in this trade because the way I view him right now is almost a better version of Jose Buto, a different version than Tyler McGill, more of a bullpen proven version of Tyler McGill. Because he's actually pitched out of the bullpen and pitched well. So it is interesting to learn about Tobias Myers and really his story to get here because it is a fascinating one. All right, let's hear the questions for David Stearns.
Hey, David. Question. You just called him a player you trust based on your obviously longstanding relationship with him. I just want to dig a little deeper into that. What about him, you know, gives him that reputation in your eyes?
Yeah, I don't know that it's only my eyes. I think it's probably anyone who's interacted with him, anyone who's been around him, and people have watched him pitch for a long time. This is someone who, first and foremost, is a really good person. He meshes well with his teammates, with his organization. He's emerged as a really quality leader in the clubhouse and with the Brewers. And he's constantly getting better. And I had a front row seat of that during his development, during his first few years at the major league level. He was never satisfied. He wants to get better. And he's been able to get about as much out of his ability as any player can. And that's been fun to watch.
And then separately, there's been a lot of rumors around him specifically for a long time.
Oh, okay. That is a part of the intrigue of Freddie Peralta, that it does feel like he has been getting better. And that's why when we debated, not Freddie Peralta versus Framber Valdez, but Framber Valdez versus Ranger Suarez or Ranger Suarez, as he later clarified, it isn't about what a guy's done. It's about how you project a guy to be. And over the last 3 years, Peralta makes every start. And it does feel like he's getting better. Now, as far as the familiarity is concerned, and David Stearns mentioned that immediately, that won't mean something to me until they sign him. In terms of trading for him, forget about any familiarity with him or forget about his personality. Wouldn't we all agree that based on the combination of age, based on the combination of how much money he's making, and based on what he's done the last few years, Freddie Peralta was point blank the best pitcher available? Like, assuming Tarik Skubal is not traded, and right now I think it's fair to assume he's not going to be traded. When you look at Dylan Cease, Ranger Suarez, Framber Valdez, we'll include Freddy Peralta, we'll include Cabrera, who got traded to Chicago, like all the pitchers that were available, not rumored to be available, available, I think most teams would say, with the combination of things, Freddy Peralta was the best guy available. So I get the familiarity, but I think that what this probably comes down to more than anything else is he was the best pitcher available. And credit to David Stearns, he made it happen. When I hear about the familiarity and how much he knows him and he likes him and all that, that only means something if now they're willing to go to a place in terms of signing him that they haven't done with anybody else. And that's the point I brought up a lot. They have not done it yet. Could this be the guy based on what David just talked about? Maybe. Maybe it is. And it would change my view on this trade a little bit more. But I think right now on the surface, Freddy Peralta, more than anything, was the best pitcher available. And the Mets got him. Next up. Go ahead, David.
Can you take us through just the entire timeline of whenever you first started talking to the Brewers about Peralta to obviously getting it done last night?
Similar to a lot of discussions that can happen over the course of the offseason, these began in November when the offseason started. And they took a lot of twists and turns and involved a lot of different names at various points, different constructs, different size of deals. I think talks probably accelerated over the last few days, and ultimately we were able to get it across the line for both sides last night.
It's funny, whenever they have the GM meetings, we always say, yeah, they're laying the groundwork. The problem is the groundwork is laid for something that isn't going to happen for 2.5 months. So in this society that we all have of, I want to know now, it's frustrating. And hopefully we can all learn a lesson from this. When I try to make a fantasy trade with Hoff, or Hoff tries to make a fantasy trade with me, usually the attitude is, let me know tonight. We're not laying the groundwork for anything. Do you want to make the trade or do you not want to make the trade? But it makes sense that Matt Arnold, his friend and the GM of the Brewers, put it out there that Freddie may be available and did not pull the trigger for months and months and months. So not a surprise that this was in the groundwork was laid out for a long time.
Dave, you started the offseason with a lot of notable subtractions, obviously. And recently you managed to check a lot of boxes. How satisfied are you with that job you're able to do in checking a lot of the boxes that the team needed? Not a lot of off seasons. Teams aren't able to do that often.
We feel good about where our team is. We think we've got a very good team. Certainly happy with the additions we've been able to make over the last couple of days and weeks. And also, frankly, really happy with the existing group we have coming back too. And we think we've got a lot of good young players. Clearly, anytime you're starting a position player grouping with Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto, you're starting from a really good spot. And so we're confident in this group. I think it's a group that's going to fit well together. And I am happy that we've been able to address the needs of the team as the offseason has gone along.
I always love how satisfied are you. I mean, what is he going to say? It sucks. I'm not happy. This is not exactly the way I wanted it. So, yes, David Stearns is telling us he's very happy with the team. We're really good. Let's go.
Hey, David, I was curious, after now that you've done all this work, where you think you are in the division? I mean, do you feel like you guys are at the top of the division? Is this where you want to be?
We've got a really tough division. We've got some really good teams and some teams that are getting better. Until we win a division, we can't claim we're at the top. So we've got to keep going and we've got to keep working. And whether that's continuing to find every incremental edge that we can find from a roster construction standpoint, whether it's finding every incremental edge we can from a player improvement standpoint, from a game management standpoint, from a transactional standpoint during the season, we've still got work to do, and we're committed to doing it.
I like that answer, by the way. I know Jimmy Rollins made a big deal out of almost manifesting we're the team to beat. Remember when he said that and it pissed us all off, and that was before the Phillies had accomplished anything. Jimmy Rollins comes out and says, we're the team to beat. What annoyed us at the time is, what have you done to earn that? And so that's the right approach. I mean, I know in Philadelphia right now they're annoyed, and they're annoyed for almost the opposite of why we were annoyed for a while. they looked at their team as stale. They looked at their team as needing to shake it up, and they didn't do it. Basically, Dave Dombrowski said, we're going to run it back. And in ways, they got worse, losing a guy like Ranger Suarez. They're still looking to dump Alec Bohm and Nick Castellanos. So I get the feeling up there, or down there, I should say. But David's right. You know, the Phillies are the team to beat till proven otherwise. That's absolutely the way to look at it. Is the gap closed? I certainly hope so. But I think that's a healthy answer. Plus, it would be very fake of David Stearns to say, yeah, we're the team to beat in the NL East. That doesn't feel like that's in his personality.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sproat's a tough one to lose. So how important was it to get another starting pitcher back in this return?
Yeah, I think, you know, we recognize that we've parted with some very good young players here, players who are going to have good major league careers. And that's part of it when you're acquiring a very good player in return. Brandon, as you mentioned, is going to be a good player. Very tough for us to give him up, and I do not think we would have given him up in a deal where there was not a starting pitcher coming back.
What do you like about Tobias Myers?
I think Tobias, first and foremost, when you look at him, he fills up the zone, and he goes right after people. He can zone up pretty much his entire arsenal. He's not afraid. He's pitched well in very big moments, as we saw firsthand a couple of years ago. And it's also the versatility and being able to have success in both the rotation and the bullpen. We like his ability to give us multiple innings out of the pen when needed, and also flex into the rotation if that's the way it goes. So that versatility, the roster flexibility that can come with it, will really help us.
This doesn't make it worth giving up two top 100 prospects. I want to make that clear. But having Myers in this trade to me is significant. I don't want to not add to the importance of that. And it's not just the long-term aspect of it, that he's got all these years of control. Because, look, as valuable as he is, I don't know. I mean, it would be a disappointment in Milwaukee if Brandon Sproat doesn't turn into Tobias Myers. He needs to be significantly better. He's a top prospect with a chance to be a top-of-the-rotation arm or a middle-of-the-rotation arm. But what's valuable in the short term for this team is exactly what he just described. You know, that guy out of the bullpen, especially in this DH world, who can get 6 outs, maybe 8 outs, maybe 9 outs. If there is a start in which your starting pitcher gets chased early and transitioning into the rotation. I mean, depth is so important. I think the Mets have a lot of that. You know, even before they added Peralta, that was the one thing about the rotation. They didn't have a top line guy, but they had a lot of guys, especially with the youth, and they still have the youth that are close, like Jonah Tong and Christian Scott should pitch this year in the major leagues. But I do think that the Myers role is very, very valuable.
I'm sure a lot of Met fans were a little nervous this offseason, not sure if what the outcome was going to be. Felt like Nemo, Alonso, Diaz leaving, and what was next. Can you talk about the anatomy of an offseason, of how it comes into play? Like, just in the last 48 hours, you guys have been able to make some serious moves.
Look, off seasons are long, and I understand when fancy good players leaving or going elsewhere at the front end of an off season. They're going to be disappointed. It's also our jobs in the front office and in the organization to recognize how long an off season truly is, to understand that there's often a whole lot of transactional activity that occurs in January, February, sometimes even March. There's going to be more acquisitions in baseball over the next couple of months. This off season is not over. And so these things have can take on a pace and life of their own every off season. And so we understood, even as the subtractions were going on, we understood that there were going to be very good opportunities for us to make our team better, to continue to add pieces, to be better. I didn't know that it was necessarily going to happen all at once in the span of a couple of days, but it has. And I'm happy with where our team is right now.
There is a notion, and I don't think it was pushed in that question or pushed in that answer by David, so I exonerate both of them in this little rant I may have. This idea that we as Met fans are just buffoons who thought that when Diaz and Alonso were gone, they weren't going to do anything. We all knew they were going to do something. The anger was losing those players. So we need to frame this argument right. Like, the Met fans are just, well, we're all a bunch of schmucks. We thought, oh, those guys are gone. That's it. We're not going to do anything. No, we disagreed with not being aggressive in bringing those guys back. Now, they're completely different situations. I think the Diaz thing, they screwed up, and they'd probably be the first to admit it. The Alonso thing, they've known for a while. They never wanted to give him a long-term contract. I think a lot of us disagreed with that. It's as simple as that. It's not, we thought off-season over. No, we didn't think that. We knew, yes, there are guys you can add. And the argument I had and a lot of people had was, I don't think what you're going to do is necessarily better than keeping Pete. Now, we'll do a whole podcast kind of redefining it now that the offseason is almost over. But I don't like the way it's represented. I'm sure, look, there are some Met fans who are stupid, sure. But most of us, we understood. Yes, there's an off season. We weren't assuming it was over. I think one of the first things I said to Teak is there's a painting, and it's going to take a while to see what the painting looks like. Right now, it's a blank slate with a stick figure, you know? So we knew that. I think there was just real disappointment about losing not just iconic players, but really good players at the beginning of the off season.
What's your overall view of the starting rotation right now?
We like our rotation, and I think being able to add Freddie as somewhat of a stabilizing force to help lead our rotation probably gives a little bit of space to some of our younger pitchers and you know keeps the opportunity for real bounce-back seasons from guys like Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga, who we're still going to rely upon and still believe are going to give us some really quality innings this year. So we like where our rotation is. I think it's got a nice combination of youth and established major league veterans. And we're also going to really like what we start the year with in AAA. And I know a number of those guys are going to contribute over the course of our season as well.
I will give you something, a little piece of information that went into my head over the last 2 days. I want to share it with the RICO audience. And we'll go deeper into it at a later date. But he talked about the rotation. And he specifically talked about the bounce back candidates, Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga. If you listen to the RICO, you know that I was always a huge fan of the tag team, of the idea of taking two starters and pairing them together. And we saw the Mets do that a little bit in September. I would absolutely, until proven otherwise, and both guys have the chance to prove it, I would tag team Kodai Senga and Sean Manaea. That came out wrong. I would use them as a tag team. I think they're both bounce back candidates. Absolutely. They both have, in their past parts of their career, proven they can be more than tag team competitors. But with a six-man rotation, which right now it's lined up to be, barring injury and trade, and obviously injuries can happen and probably will happen, but I like the idea of doing that specifically with those two guys. And we saw Manaea do a good job with it. So we'll go more in detail about that. I'll tell you this, we're going to go to spring training. That is my mission, to pound that question to Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns if I'm ever lucky enough to get another meeting, because I think it's interesting. And I loved it before they tried it. I loved it when they tried it. And I think the way things are lining up right now, assuming they can somehow stay healthy and they're not dumping Kodai Senga, which I think is still a possibility, that would be something I'd be intrigued by.
Hey, David, this is perhaps a little bit similar to Abby's question, but with the reality that Peralta is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, I guess how do you kind of square giving up two of your top five prospects in Jet and Brandon?
Always tough to give up good players, and those are two really good players. It's also the reality of what it costs to acquire good players coming back. We're acquiring one of the better starting pitchers in baseball, guy who's been really consistent, and it was going to hurt, and it does hurt, and giving up good players hurts, and those guys are going to be playing in Milwaukee for a long time, and we're going to be competing against them. We're also really excited to get Freddie and Tobias here, and I think both of those guys are really going to help us.
This is the part that's caused me pause and a lot of other people pause. They gave up a lot. It feels like an awful lot for a rental. We earlier in the offseason were breaking down past starting pitcher trades. We did it with Garrett Crochet and Chris Sale and potentially Tarik Skubal and even Mike Hampton with us many years ago, Corbin Burns. And for a guy with 1 year left of control, which is Peralta, and I understand Myers is in the deal too, but let's be honest, you gave up those prospects for Freddie Peralta. You're not giving up those prospects for Tobias Myers, as valuable as he may be. The returns for guys with 1 year left of control has been less. I mean, this is more than they gave up for Corbin Burns. So that's the thing that's tough to kind of digest. Now, I get it, because David Stearns also has a confidence in this farm system, a confidence in other guys. Okay, Brandon Sproat won't be here, but Jonah Tong will. But I definitely think that the return that they gave up is a lot. It's a big return. Very big return. Anyhow, let's hear more from David Stearns.
Hey, David. A couple of things, totally different, actually. But to this point, you'd held on to your top prospects, your highest rated prospects, pretty tight. Just, you know, why was this the moment to make that type of deal? And just real quick, Matt Arnold, on his comments last night, said that that yesterday or last night was your wedding anniversary, and he thinks he may have interrupted your anniversary dinner. Just wondering if he was like serious about that or joking, or if you might, you know, share any of what that was like yesterday for you.
Yeah, no, Matt was serious. Matt was at my wedding 9 years ago, so Matt certainly knows that that was my anniversary. And so, you know, had some conversations at dinner, and then was able to wrap up the trade once we got home. And in terms of why now, I think it's a combination of where we see our team, what we thought was important to add to our team, and the type of players we're getting back. And when you add all that up, we were comfortable giving up the type of quality that we gave up.
I'm starting to think, like, my wife is very understanding, very understanding. You know, Met games, Ricos, all that. If we are out to dinner for that anniversary dinner and Hoff texts me and says, we got a monster Met trade, man. We got to do that Rico right now. I don't think my wife would forgive me. But good job, David. You know, we've given you a lot of crap this offseason. Certainly gotten a lot of crap from me. For you to have the balls to basically leave your anniversary dinner to seal a trade, good job. Because I don't know how that would have gone in the Roberts household.
Hey, David. Obviously, Peralta is a free agent, as was mentioned earlier, but you have signed him to an extension before. Are you hopeful that could be done at some point here?
I'm not going to speculate on that on day one here. We'll let Freddie get acclimated to the organization. And you know, any conversations that we may have or have in the future, I think we're going to do our best to keep private and not talk about publicly.
I don't want to read too much into that comment, because David Stearns' approach is probably, I'm not telling you anything about that stuff. I'm just not telling you whether we're doing it or not doing it. I'm not going to bring it up. But if he says, and I think this is an innocuous answer, but it would have given me more hope in the Mets changing their approach for someone like Freddie Peralta, it could have been, don't want to put pressure on Freddie. He's earned the right to get to free agency, but of course we're open to it. And in a of course, we're open to it would lead me to think, hey, maybe they'll have a conversation. You know, you never know. We've already seen a report from Pat Regazzo that the Peralta camp is open to it. Now, what are they asking for? I don't know. And is it ever going to be something that would make David Stearns feel comfortable? Look, I am not guaranteeing you that David isn't going to change his rules. I am merely telling you, and I think this is a fair approach to have in life, I'm not going to believe it till I see it. He's been here for 3 years. He has signed a lot of starting pitchers. They've been connected to a lot of starting pitchers. And other than Yamamoto, they have never made any offer, reportedly, unless there's a secret one we don't know about, of more than 3 years. Hasn't happened. Yamamoto, the exception. Corbin Burnes, another guy. He knew. No offer. Now, turned out to be smart considering what happened to him. Hasn't happened. So it is fair for me and others to be skeptical on the Mets locking Peralta up long-term on a long-term deal because we haven't seen him do it. It just hasn't happened yet. So my guess is it's not going to happen. My guess is the report of him being open to an offer is true, but he's open to an offer. Yeah, he's open to 8 years, $35 million a year, and the Mets are probably not going to be. And so just based on the track record, not just of Stearns, but of really the Mets over the last 3 years, which I guess is David Stearns, I do not expect a contract extension. If it happens, I'd be very excited. And I've said before, it would change my view on the trade because then I believe, yes, you gave up two top 100 prospects, but you did it for the next 5 years of a top of the rotation arm versus a rental. And until proven otherwise, this is a rental trade. And I've been pretty consistent about this over the years, so I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. Whenever we've talked about rentals, more times than not, I've shied away from it. I didn't want to rent Juan Soto 2 years ago. I argued with Met fans about that. So until proven otherwise, this is a rental, and that non-answer doesn't mean they're not interested, but until proven otherwise, I'm going to assume they're not interested.
And obviously, you've done a lot here in the last week. What's left? What's next? What do you want to do? What's left to do to improve this roster?
We're always open to improving the team. I think we've checked off some of the main goals of the offseason, but if there are opportunities to get better, we're going to explore them. We still got time before spring training. I imagine there are going to be transactions in spring training as well. There always are. So we'll keep busy. We'll keep in touch with both the trade market and the free agent market. And you know, in terms of what exactly is next, I don't know, but we'll keep working at it.
I think they're mostly done, and I'm going to use the word mostly because I'm still skeptical they're going to keep Kodai Senga. I would. I don't think you ever have enough pitching, and I don't like selling him for 30 cents on the dollar or whatever that price would be. But that answer makes me believe we're probably done, but you never know. I mean, something opportunistic could come our way.
All these patients complaining they can't get their medicines. Insurers and PBMs are often owned by the same giant company, so middlemen, like me, decide what medicines you can get and how much you pay. But don't worry, if your prescription gets denied, we know another one that works for us. I mean, you.
Washington should stop PBMs and insurers from driving up drug costs. Learn more at phrma.org/insurer costs. Paid for by pharma.
I know that you're probably aware of the noise that's surrounding this offseason. I'm not sure how much of it you've heard or how much you paid attention to it, but you know, just knowing that it was a lot, did that at all? I mean, I know you're aware of what Mets fans are like, what New York City as a market is like, but did that, even knowing that, was it at all surprising just how visceral it was for a while?
No, I, honestly, it wasn't. I think, I and we as an organization knew what the response was going to be when we made some of the decisions we made early in the offseason. We completely understand it. I understand it. Those are tough decisions. And everything we did is in the effort to create a consistent championship caliber organization. Everything we do going forward is in the effort of creating a consistent championship caliber organization. And I and we also understand that some of those moves are going to be very difficult to digest, especially in the near term for a fan base. So I was not surprised, and we as an organization were not surprised by some of the noise earlier in the offseason.
You would have to have been an idiot to be surprised. So that's the right answer. The one thing I ask, and I made this comp months ago, don't lie to us. You know, I told the story that I was talking to Sean Marks years ago when he first took the Nets job, and I said, how much do you factor in Brooke Lopez's time here and the records he has set here when deciding if he should be a part of the future? And he's like, oh, it's a big factor. We think about it. And he couldn't wait to trade him, which probably was the right decision, not even arguing that. When David was ever asked about, hey, does it matter that Pete's a lifelong man at the home runs? He would always say it's a factor. I don't think it's a factor at all. And you could say it. You could just give us the cold, hard truth, which is I'm about winning. And I'm always going to make the decision based on what gives us the best chance to win. I'm not really thinking about a guy's history here. And you could just say that because I think it's clear that that has been the case, that you're not factoring that stuff in.
You know what would have been easier? If he traded Jeff McNeil first before losing Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso. I think that would have been a safer space.
It wouldn't have made a difference, bro. You know what would have been safer, honestly? If they would have lost Pete and signed Bichette the next day or something of that nature. I think it was the midweek massacre of Diaz and Alonso back-to-back. Devin Williams coming before it also hurt because, look, Devin may be great here. I have no idea. I'm not confident, but I have no idea. He has a negative connotation attached to him because of his struggles with the Yankees and because he was on the wrong end of the Pete Alonso home run. I think a lot of it was the timing of that. I think Jeff McNeil's irrelevant to this, to be honest.
I hear you. I get you. By the way, did you hear him yesterday say that there was no locker room issues in an interview?
Yes.
Okay. Just
make sure. First of all, I keep relitigating this. I'm sure they all didn't get along, but it's common. Like, I think when you lose, we make a bigger deal out of it. And that's my point consistently about this, that I'm sure the locker room, like the rumors of the political differences or whatever, I'm sure it's all true, but I'm sure it also happened in the Phillies locker room. You know what I mean? Or the Dodgers locker room. It's just we don't hear about it unless you have a really bad season. And that's my point always about the locker room stuff.
All right, here we go.
Let's hear more from the president.
Hey, David, you've talked about adding Freddie as to the top half of your rotation, but there's kind of top half starters and there's number one starters. I'm wondering in your mind, is Freddie a kind of prototypical number one starter for you now?
Yeah, I think we have multiple starters in our rotation who at various points in their career have pitched as number one starters. Certainly Freddie qualifies as that. We saw Nolan flash potential as a number one starter last year. We have seen Sean Manaea pitch as an ace before I got here. Kodai Senga pitched as an ace. So I think we have multiple pitchers in our rotation right now that have pitched as an ace, and I would certainly put Freddie in that category.
If you listened to the Rico we did after the Freddie trade, one of the things I did is I went through his game logs from last year, and we were going through how many innings he pitched in each start. And I kind of have to admit, especially after we did it and digesting it now, it was a lower number than I would have assumed. Like, he's really good. He pitched to a 2.7 ERA, and I love it. And he's made 30 starts in three straight years. I love it. But whether it was the Brewers choosing, and we'll find out this year with the Mets, or not, he was not a deep in innings guy. Just to give you a perspective on this, he made 33 starts last year and threw 176 innings. Kodai Senga in his rookie season threw 10 fewer innings and made 4 fewer starts. Just to give you a perspective on that. And we know what's said about Kodai Senga. And that doesn't mean I don't want him. It doesn't mean it wasn't needed. One of the things I have stressed over and over again about what this rotation needed was certainty. And while nothing is certain in life, three straight 30-plus start seasons is as certain as you're going to get in baseball or towards the top end of it. So he's really good. He makes his starts. He just doesn't go as deep into games as maybe we would have assumed without breaking down the numbers. So that's when I say, if he's not an ace, he's close. I stand by that. Like, Tarik Skubal is an ace. Freddy Peralta's close to one. He's right there. And I'm willing to hold out judgment on the innings based on that could have been a Brewer thing. Let's see what happens here, especially if he doesn't have a contract for next season. I'm not sitting here worrying about how many innings he's throwing when he may not be on the team and there may be a lockout in 2027. So if Freddie's making 33 starts, I want that number to be higher than 176. I want that number to be 190 or 200 or something of that nature. Keep going, David.
How's it going, David? I'm curious, you know, considering how much emphasis you placed on run prevention, kind of at the end of the season press conference you had. What gives you the confidence that the group that you have assembled for 2026 is going to be better on that front, particularly when you have two guys in the infield that will be playing completely new positions for them?
Good question.
Yeah, so I think first we look at what our defense looks like up the middle, and we really like what our defense looks like up the middle right now. I think we're clearly better in some key defensive positions up the middle. There's no question we're asking two guys to learn some new positions. We're also asking two guys with very high baseball aptitude who are good athletes who have spent the majority of their careers at the shortstop position to learn new positions on the dirt. There's going to be learning curves. We're going to make mistakes. I also have a high degree of confidence that both those players are going to figure it out and be able to play their positions at a pretty high level.
Yeah, the up the middle thing is undeniable. I brought that up right away. I mean, second base, shortstop, assuming we're not going to see a decline because of the age of Lindor and Semien, which can always happen, assuming they are who they are, that's a pretty damn good double play combination. And Luis Robert Jr.'s question is more related to his health and his offense. His defense has been stellar. So they are really good up the middle. And the thing about guys who haven't played a position, because I want to be fair about it, is while we can't assume they're going to be good, we can't assume they're going to suck. Now, would I lean a little bit more towards the sucking than being really good when you're learning a new position? Probably. I think it always depends on the player. But there is no doubt that you are facing uncertainty at 2.5 positions. You're facing it at third, you're facing it at first, and you may face it in left. Like if Brett Beatty ends up playing a lot of left field, there is uncertainty there. Now, as long as Tyrone Taylor is out there or Carson Benj is out there, it is absolutely different. But if Brett Beatty's playing a lot of left field, then you have to throw another position in there where you're not really sure what you're getting defensively.
Hey, David, again, I just wanted to follow up quickly on Jorge's question. Generally speaking, when it comes to acquiring players, do you ever, or to what extent would you ever look at a negotiation and look at the player beyond the term that he's under contract? For example, like, do you always look at it in a vacuum? I'm giving up these players for this player and his contract term, or do you ever think about the possibility that it could be a longer relationship, especially with a player that you know well?
I think as you're evaluating a transaction where the player is under contract for a relatively short amount of time, you have to assume the player is under contract for a relatively short amount of time and make the transaction with those assumptions. Clearly, that can change. But when you're going through the evaluation period, I think you have to make the determination that the contract is the contract and the player is under a contract for a finite period.
That there's your answer. This is the concern. It's two top 100 prospects for a rental. And what everyone's got to think about, and maybe everyone's going to come up with different answers, is what makes it worth it. Now, again, Tobias Myers isn't useless in this. He can be here for the next 3 or 4 years. But I would almost equate that to Trent Grisham when it comes to the Yankees and the trade they made for Juan Soto. Yes, Grisham had a great year after Soto was gone. That was the Juan Soto trade. Now, it enhances the trade a little bit if a guy sticks around for 4 or 5 years and contributes. No question. But what has to happen in this 1 year with Freddy Peralta for it to have been worth trading two top 100 prospects? It is a fair question, and I'm curious what everyone's answer is. Here is your final question and answer from David Stearns.
You addressed this a little bit, but just looking for something to give the fans confidence that the way you finished last season is not the way you're going to finish this season with the way the roster has been built out now.
Yeah, I think as we got into the offseason and we reflected on our 25 season, we made the determination that we had to do better and we were not going to run back the same group. And that has driven a large portion of our strategy to this point. So we're going to go into the into this year with, I think, a very talented group, but also a group that looks somewhat different. There are going to be a lot of guys in our clubhouse who really have no affiliation at all with what happened to us in 25. And I think that's healthy. And I think that's good for us.
So that's very interesting. And I think a lot of people, even if they disagreed with Alonso's departure and Nimmo's departure, will nod their head at, we made the determination we couldn't run it back. That's a tough thing to argue. I admit that. As someone that wanted Pete back, that's a tough thing to argue. But here's what I wonder. and I'll never know the answer. Let's say they didn't collapse. Let's say the Mets, you know, played well, won 92 games, made the playoffs, and really it happened the way it happened to Philadelphia. And they're upset in Philly, by the way. You win the division, you get to that division series, you lose to the Dodgers, okay? I kind of think the same stuff would have happened. I have to be honest with you. As much as we all get the, we made a determination, we couldn't run it back, tough to argue when you have a collapse like that, they were never giving Pete Alonso a long-term deal. I don't think the Mets winning or losing or whatever would have changed that. I don't think their approach to Edwin Diaz would have changed. He's still the best closer in baseball. They kind of wanted him back. So when it comes to Alonso and Diaz, the two things that I think really hit the Met fan more than anything else, they were both probably going to be gone and things would have played out in the same way. Am I wrong about that? I don't think so. You want to tell me Nimmo, maybe it's a little different. Okay, but probably not, considering the non-appeal in Nimmo was the contract. Well, that wasn't going to change. So I get it. I do. I get the idea of we couldn't run it back after last year. But I also push back and say, even if you did have a good year, I think the similar stuff would have played out, in my opinion. But what I want to do, and I think it's healthy for all of us, we're not going to do it right away. I told you our next Rico will kind of argue the Freddie Peralta trade. I'm going to read a ton of your emails. But I think in the next 2 weeks or so, giving it more time to marinate and also seeing if any other moves are made, I think with a clearer mind, we should really grade this offseason. And obviously, you never know the final answer till the results. We all know that. But in terms of how do we feel about this team, the changes in the rotation, the changes in the bullpen, the changes to the core, the changes to the lineup, because I think as it's happening, we're all very emotional. And I always said, let the painting be drawn. We'll have a better determination to relitigate the fights from December. And I think we will do that in the next couple of weeks. But one of my favorite parts of the David Stearns press conference that we react to is when our good friend of the Rico and the Evan and Tiki Show, Dan, gives us his David Stearns translator, in which he translates some of the things David Stearns said. So do you remember earlier when he talked about, first and foremost, Freddie Peralta's a good person, we love him, quality leader, blah, 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 I had a front row seat. Here's what David Stearns really meant. You should know by now, I have my former Brewers quota I have to hit every offseason. I usually take care of that after we fill our former Yankees one, which obviously takes priority. But I always need to have my Milwaukee boys with me. Why do you think I snatched up Devin Williams as soon as I possibly could? You think there was a chance I was letting the crown jewel double quota filler go anywhere else? In terms of an extension with Freddie Peralta, remember when David Stearns says we're going to keep that private? The Stearns translator says, LOL. You guys still asking if I'm going to give long-term deals to pitchers is hysterical, especially that one that turns 30 in June. You people really don't listen, do you? Dan never misses with these. David Stearns, when asked if the Mets are the top team in the NL East, remember he said until we win a division, we can't claim we're at the top? Here's what Stearns really meant. Please, can we just start a season without talking about how great we are before we ever step on the field? You had half the locker room talking about how they were the best lineup in baseball during spring last year, and you douches in the media saying we're going to be better than the 06 team. Anybody know how that worked out? Please let us go out and work, and then when we're actually good, you can start drooling over us. Tremendous. Tremendous. When Stearns said what he likes about the Mets during the offseason, he said, I understand when fancy good players leave or going elsewhere. At the front end of the offseason, they're going to be disappointed, blah, blah, blah. It's a long offseason. There's going to be more acquisitions in baseball over the next few months. The offseason is not over. The translator says, you all must feel real dumb for doubting the smartest man in the room, don't you? That goes for you too, Joe B. I'll accept your apology in person at the parade. By the way, that's the only way Joe would apologize, if there was a parade. But even now, I think, rightfully so, he's still annoyed about the Pete Alonso stuff. And finally, I think we have multiple starters in our rotation who at various points in their career have pitched as number one starters. David really meant someone, please take Kodai Senga. Yeah, I'm going to still lean towards they're going to move him. I hope they don't. The one move for Senga I'm still intrigued by is Christian Walker, because I like the idea of a real first baseman, and then Polanco can DH a lot, fill in all over the infield. I know that kind of hurts Mark Vientos a lot. Like Christian Walker hurts Mark Vientos because he probably loses at bats, even though Vientos may not play a lot of first base. But outside of a move like that, and maybe one I'm not thinking of, I prefer to keep Senga, and I'll go more in depth on this soon. I really like the idea of tag teaming or using as a tag team Kodai Senga and Shamania. I think there's a lot of positive to that. And having Tobias Myers helps. Now, you may say, well, how the hell does that help, Ev? You have less guys in your bullpen if you're going with a six-man rotation. And the way to pull that off is to have guys in your bullpen who can pitch multiple innings. So I'll go into more detail on why I think that makes sense. But assuming they keep Senga, that's how I would deploy it. Now, if both guys are great and they prove they can go more than five innings, card subject to change. I'm certainly open to it. But it's an idea that I would push coming out of spring training. Anyway, I appreciate you listening and downloading the Rico. I told you, we will get to some of the Ricos I've talked about, the Edwin Diaz trade, where it ranks in Met history. We'll get to that. The Rico rewatchable, the game after 9/11, also the losses of Met players in free agency. We will do a whole podcast about that. And I mentioned kind of reevaluating the offseason. So sorry, Hoff, we got a lot of work to do as we march towards spring training.
It's okay. I don't mind it. But I do have one question for you, because you started this podcast basically telling everyone that you are feeling much better today about the team than you did when the initial trade happened. So you're feeling good about it. That's great. But I want to know, really, on a scale of 1 to 10, how you actually feel about this team. Are you like are you 10 out of 10 right now? This team is good, set to go, and we're going to be competitive. Are you feeling like more like me, where it's like 6.5.
So the reason I'm warming up to the Peralta thing is because my trepidation is about the future. My trepidation is about those prospects. It's about not keeping Freddy Peralta. And the reality is that's more impactful in 27, 28, and 29. And so I stand by how I feel, but now my brain moves to 26. And there is no question that in 2026, the Mets are significantly better when you add Freddy Peralta versus two guys who may or may not have contributed at all to the 2026 team. As far as how I feel about the team overall, I'm very mixed about it. Like, they are so different on every level, whether it's the way games are closed, whether it's the way the lineup is constructed and who's in the lineup. It is just such a different team. So in this moment, and that's why I want to give it, like I said earlier, like a week or two, and then really fully digest what we lost, what we gained, and how I feel about the team. Eventually, we'll make predictions on win totals. Right now, in this moment, and this may sound like a non-answer. If it is, I apologize. It's truthfully how I feel. In this moment, I am still, like, very mixed. They are so different. And there's a part of me that's excited because they have a chance to be really good. I think they've created more questions. Like, there are more what-ifs on this team now. Like, what if Bo Bichette can't convert to third base? You know? What if Jorge Polanco can't play first base? What if Devin Williams truly can't handle New York and we have a closer's issue on May 1st? Like, so that's where I'm kind of in the middle on this. But I'm going to give an answer, a firm one, but I still want to give it more time to let it all marinate. And I think that's the healthy approach. It's not best for sports talk radio, but it is the best when you're trying to be honest. And we will be honest on this, Rico. So I don't know, Hoff, be open-minded. Your view on this team may change in a week too, when you really give it thought and you write down the lineups 15 times, which I like to do. And I map out my rotation plans, which I'm about to do. And I think of what the 26-man roster is going to look like, which I'm about to do. I think all of that may lead me to a darker place or a more positive place.
I'll say this, and a lot of people think that you and I are negative with how this offseason is. I think the first half of the offseason, we were rightfully so to be negative. This is a David Stearns team, and if you trusted David Stearns when they first brought him in, this is what he envisioned, and I could hate all the moves he's done, but this is his team. He put his stamp on it. So for that, I have to trust in David Stearns. So I'm going to cross my fingers that it's a 10 of 10.
A negative fan is someone who hates everything, and a positive fan is someone who loves everything, right? So I don't mean to knock positive Tommy. I love positive Tommy. He's a positive fan. The Mets could take a dump on the middle of the field, and he'll say that was great. That's a positive fan. A negative fan is someone who thinks everything sucks. I have not said that about the Met offseason. I have said things suck. I have disagreed with things, but but I have not crapped on everything. I jumped for joy when they signed Bo Bichette. I have been talking about Luis Robert Jr. for 2 months. So there are moves I like. There are moves I didn't like. And so I think it's unfair sometimes when people are defined as positive or negative. Like, there was a million moves this offseason. It's tough to imagine you would love every single move. It's also tough to imagine that you would hate every single move. And that's why, in a week or so, we can give a full marking of everything. Because then you put all the pieces together, and then you determine, all right, was this overall good, bad, or I'm somewhere in the middle. But I don't think it's fair to say I'm negative when there's a lot of things I've liked about the offseason. But if you cherry pick, mad about Alonso, trepidation on the Peralta trade, oh yeah, negative. Well, that's two pieces. There were 150 pieces in this offseason, so we will get there eventually. But keep your emails coming. There's a lot of them. We will try to edit through them and interact with you as much as possible. TheRicoB@gmail.com is the email. And by the way, with all that snow coming, Hoff and I may do 17 Ricos on Sunday and Monday. We may have all the time in the world in between shoveling. But thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.